The Reverend Dr. Alan Dan Orm died at home on Thursday, August the 27th, 2015. He was 82 years old and had been a citizen of Athens, Georgia, for 46 years. He was the minister of the University Church, which he founded in 1970 on the campus of the University of Georgia. Dr. Orm had been a minister in the North Georgia Presbytery of the Presbyterian Church in America. He held five academic degrees, including a Ph.D. in history from UGA. He studied archaeology at the Near East School of Archaeology in Jerusalem. In his youth, Dr. Orm was a carpenter and was a soldier in the Korean War. Before coming to Athens, he served for 8 years as the academic dean of Carver Bible College. The Reverend Dr. Orm was a native of Elmira, New York, and was preceded in death by his parents, a brother, and a sister. He is survived by nephews and nieces distributed across four countries and three continents. He's been a well-known figure around Athens neighborhoods for years, both for his yellow Model A roadster and for his ubiquitous presence as a cyclist and pedestrian. He wrote extensively in periodicals and journals and authored two books, Restoring Old Houses and God's Appointments with Men. He was known for his continuous work on his 1897 home on Church Street and for his interest in antiques and collectibles. Thus saith the Athens Daily Herald and the Atlanta Journal and Constitution. They have the facts right in the eulogy. The meaning of those facts is what the rest of us are going to try in our poor, unworthy way to get at. We have a lot of people at University Church now who did not have the privilege of knowing Dr. Orm when he was still himself. Because knowing something about the unique person Dan was is essential to understanding the nature, history, and personality of the church he founded. I would like to give a fairly full history of his life before saying a little about my own personal memories. I do this both to honor Dan and because I think knowing these things is very crucial at this point in the history of University Church and may be instructive to his friends in other churches as well. These are things I have picked up from being his parishioner and his friend for the last 40 years. Alan Dan Orm was not raised as a Christian, not as an evangelical Christian. A mediocre student in high school, his only ambition was to work as a carpenter and build houses. He was saved during his time as a soldier in the Korean War and returned to the States afterward with a new sense of calling and a new love of learning as a result. He enrolled in Columbia Bible College, now Columbia International University, where he took a Bachelor of Science in Biblical Education, then proceeded to Covenant Theological Seminary, Bachelor of Divinity, Master of Theology, and the University of Georgia, MA in Classics, PhD in History with a concentration on Patristics, the time of the early church fathers. He was the most learned pastor I have personally known, but he always wore his learning lightly. You could see it informing everything he said if you knew how to listen. After seminary, Dan was ordained in the Reformed Presbyterian Church Evangelical Synod, which later merged with the Presbyterian Church in America. He pastored a few small churches, then served as academic dean of Carver Bible College, a school for African Americans in Atlanta. This was at a time when race mixing was still an evil epithet in the South. Dan basically didn't care. He raised the academic standards there as much as he could, given the school's budget and culture. He came to Athens in the late 60s to work on his advanced degrees at UGA. When he showed up in town, he still had his army buzz cut. That and a lot else was going to change. Dan and a small group of his fellow Christians, I think Darwin Smith may be the only one left of that original group, were concerned that there was no church in Athens at the time that was both conservative and good at reaching out to the university community. They wanted a church that would be solidly committed to historic Christian faith without being implicated in what Mark Knoll would later call the scandal of the evangelical mind, and that would be specifically oriented to reaching out to the youth culture, hippies at the time, and meeting the religious needs, including the intellectual challenges facing university students who were already believers. University Church was the result of that vision. I didn't become a member until 1976, when I moved to Athens to pursue my own doctorate after graduating from seminary. But I first met Dan while visiting a friend of mine at UGA in about 1970, when the church was in its infancy. That friend was David Gordon, who wants me to convey his love for all of you and his deep regret that he couldn't be here. He was planning to. David is taking care of his aged father, who is 95 years old, and his father had a bad day yesterday, and David felt like he just couldn't leave. Some of us, I think, will be able to relate to what David is going through. So he sends his very deep regrets. Well, he took me to UC during that visit while it was in its infancy. It was meeting in a UGA conference room in Memorial Hall. There was no piano. Music was provided by a guitar and a violin on the melody, classical hymns. The room had a long conference table surrounded by chairs. Dan improvised a pulpit by putting his briefcase on a stack of books at the head of the conference table. Because most of the young people in the church at that time were hippies, Dan had let his buzz cut grow out. His hair was halfway down his back. His classic goatee was already there, but black instead of the white we know now. He had on his clerical collar and a black shirt with a big gaudy cross on hippie beads hanging down the front, and an army field jacket thrown over the whole ensemble. Out of that bizarre-looking person was coming careful exposition, just like what Dan's later congregants were used to. Visually, Dan had identified with his audience, but in the content and style of his sermon, there was no effort whatsoever to be relevant or hip. Dan trusted the gospel and the truth of the scriptures to be relevant just because of what they were. There was a bit of wry humor that you would miss if you weren't paying attention. Most people were. The rest was straightforward teaching and application. There was, though, an earnestness about it, as if the person speaking truly believed that his and our understanding and following the scriptures was a matter of life and death. I don't remember the specific content of that sermon. It was, after all, 45 years ago. But one impression from that day stayed with me. The sermon was from the epistle, so it wasn't about Jesus directly, but all good preaching, of course, is about Jesus ultimately. And when Dan had occasion to refer to him, there was none of the buddy-buddy shtick that was common in youth-oriented ministry at the time, and still is. Dan's voice changed ever so slightly. A subtle emotional husk came into it. And he referred to the Savior as the Lord of glory, as if he had actually pondered the meaning of those words and fully meant them himself. I turned to David at the end of the sermon and said, "That man knows how to be a pastor." Boy, was I right. So when I came to Athens half a decade later, I already knew what church I was going to join. Dan told me he had assumed that he would pastor the church until he graduated with his doctorate and then pass it on to someone else. He wanted to end up teaching church history in seminary, but the call to do that never came. And Dan was faithful to his charge for over three decades until his memory loss made it impossible for him to remain effective. We all thought Dan deserved a larger audience, but he never acted as if he thought so. It was a basic humility about the man, such as I have seldom seen in anyone so gifted. He was the founding pastor of University Church. He could very easily have become its little pope if he had wanted to, but he insisted from the beginning on shared leadership because he believed it was the right thing to do. His intellect was top-notch. He read Greek fluently in those days. We used to have a Greek reading group, which he led, where those of us who had taken some Greek would take turns reading a verse and translating it with Dan's critique to keep our skills up. His knowledge of church history was as deep and rich as any seminary church history professor I've ever met. He focused particularly on the three periods he considered crucial: the patristic era, the Reformation, and the fundamentalist-modernist controversy in early 20th century America. But he knew the rest well, too, and it was a never-ending source of illustrations for his sermons. Yet, despite his academic bent and real expertise in exegesis, theology, and history, he never used technical jargon or quoted anything just to show off. Most learned and least pretentious. It's a rare combination. Too rare. Too rare, I say. I was, in 1976, a hotshot seminary graduate who thought I was the most brilliant theologian since John Calvin. Dan gave me a chance to preach sometime that first year. I quoted several theologians that nobody had ever heard of or cared about, precisely because nobody had heard of them and because their names were hard to pronounce, just to show off how learned and brilliant I was. "Stop by sometime next week," said Dan. I did. "What did you think of the sermon?" I asked, expecting him to be properly impressed. "Do you have any idea what a jackass you are?" was his response. I quote it precisely. I didn't. He explained it to me. And then he asked me to preach again. Very soon after that, which I don't think he was actually planning to do at first, I was, shall we say, somewhat less of a jackass that time. It was exactly what I needed. If I've learned anything at all about how to take intellectual gifts and actually use them for the edification of the church, I learned it from Dan Orr, who taught it to me by precept, by example, and by rebuke, and by loving patience and giving me a second chance that I frankly did not deserve. There are other aspects as to why Dan is my role model and should be yours. He was willing to let Scripture rather than cultural expectations set the agenda for the church. I think we start at 10 a.m. as much because it isn't 11 as because Dan realized that the New Testament program for the church couldn't be realized in 1 hour. But the things I want to close with are more issues of character. Oh, we remember and love his eccentricity, and that was essential to who he was. But integrity, intelligence, humility, faithfulness, and tough love may not be what the church thinks it wants in a pastor, but they are what it truly needs. I learned what little I know of these things from Dan Orme. I'm glad that some of you got to see them in him.